The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles initially from the Harvard Health Letter and probably from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter as well. I'm going to start with the Harvard Health Letter of June 2024. And the first article I'm going to read is called Tips for Traveling with Incontinence. INCONTINENCE. Traveling any distance can be worrisome and uncomfortable when you have incontinence. You might feel stressed about having embarrassing accidents and then having to deal with wet clothes. What's the best way to avoid all that? Plan ahead. Here are some strategies that can help, whether you're going on errands across town or a trip far away from home. Certain foods and drinks can irritate your bladder and cause an urgent need to go to the bathroom. Beginning the day before a long trip, try to skip anything with caffeine. Coffee, tea, energy drinks, caffeinated sodas, chocolate. Also skip carbonated beverages, including sparkling water, alcohol, and spicy foods. What you eat or drink now can affect you later in the day or even the next day. Favor plain water if possible, says Dr. Malika Anand, a urogynecologist at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Urge suppression sends a powerful message from the voluntary muscles in the pelvic floor to the involuntary muscles in the bladder, telling them not to contract. There are many different urge suppression techniques. When you're at home with access to a bathroom, if you feel a sudden urge to urinate, stay seated and contract your pelvic floor muscles, the ones you'd normally squeeze to hold in urine or gas. Dr. Anand says, after 5 seconds, calmly walk to the restroom. Physical therapists who specialize in such urge suppression techniques, pelvic floor therapists, can help you learn how to do this. If you worry that your bladder's behavior will interfere with a trip or an important day of activities, talk to your doctor. It might be possible to take a short course of medications that ease an overactive bladder or increase bladder capacity. Test the medication at least a month before you need it to check for side effects, including difficulty urinating or emptying your bladder, Dr. Anand says. Wear adaptive clothing. Dress for success has a different meaning when you're dealing with an overactive bladder. You need clothes with easy-to-use fasteners or elastic waistbands to get your pants and underwear down in a hurry. Clothes that can hide leaks, dark colors work but well, as do long shirts that cover your bottom, and bladder leak underwear that's absorbent, washable, and reusable. You might also want to put on barrier cream with zinc oxide near your inner thighs to ward off skin irritation. If you plan to wear an adult diaper on an airplane, you might want to sign up for a TSA notification card. It alerts agents about your condition and that it may affect your screening. For more information, check out the TSA website. Put together a small bag of supplies that can save the day. This might include a change of underwear or pants, an adult diaper with a natural fiber lining, like cotton or bamboo. Odor control spray, a gallon-sized plastic bag to stash wet clothing, a towel, and a portable urinal. It's also wise to keep some pocket change handy if you're traveling, particularly outside the United States. Many places charge for restroom use, and you'll need the coins or bills. Find out in advance where public bathrooms are located so you know what your restroom options are when you're out. To find bathrooms, call a particular destination, look on its website, or use a locator app. Some apps like Toilet Finder or Flush map the locations of hundreds of thousands of bathrooms in North America. Other apps map bathrooms in a particular country. For example, the National Public Toilet Map is provided by the Australian government and focuses on public bathrooms in Australia. Go to the bathroom before you leave home, then try to use a bathroom every 2 to 3 hours, even if you don't think you need to go. Waiting any longer could risk an accident or a larger leak, Dr. Anand says. Don't be hard on yourself if you have an accident. After all, you're not the only person dealing with bladder urgency. It's common. We're seeing it at younger and younger ages now that people carry large water bottles everywhere and start drinking coffee at younger ages. So just do what you can to avoid an accident. Don't let your bladder rule your life. For more information about coping with incontinence, check out the Harvard Special Health Report, Better Bladder and Bowel Control, at www.health.harvard.edu/bladder. Now here's a couple of short articles from News Briefs in the Harvard Health Letter. The first says, more evidence that ultra-processed foods harm health. Need more reasons to stop eating ultra-processed food? How about 32 of them? That's the number of health problems noted in the largest ever review of studies about the dangers of diets high in ultra-processed foods. The findings, published online February 28, 2024, by the BMJ, come from a review of 45 analyses published in the last 3 years, involving about 10 million people in total. When scientists graded the evidence, they found the most convincing or highly suggestive evidence linked diets rich in ultra-processed foods with increased risk for premature death, cardiovascular disease, mental health disorders, diabetes, obesity, and sleep problems. Associations between ultra-processed foods and asthma, gastrointestinal disease, some cancers, and other health issues were limited. The authors say, and need further investigation. What are ultra-processed foods? They're ready-to-eat products like deli meat, microwavable dinners, or chips. They typically have long ingredient lists with lots of additives, like preservatives, oil, sugar, salt, coloring, and flavoring. You'll do yourself a favor if you can cut them out of your diet as much as possible and replace them with less processed options or, best of all, whole foods. And finally, do you want better sleep? Aim for at least an hour of exercise per week. Regular exercise promotes better sleep quality and reduces the risk for insomnia. But how much exercise does it take to get sleep benefits? A study published online March 26, 2024, by BMJ Open suggests an answer. Researchers evaluated the sleep questionnaire responses of about 4,400 people. Participants reported on their overall health and various aspects of their physical activity and sleep habits, including how long they usually slept each night and any insomnia symptoms they had, like difficulty falling asleep, nighttime awakening, or daytime sleepiness. Answers were collected at 2 points in time, 10 years apart. People who said that they exercised at least twice a week, for a total of at least an hour a week, for the entire 10 years, were much less likely to report sleeping difficulty compared with people who reported that they were either inactive or less active during the study period. The study is observational and can't prove conclusively that exercising an hour or more per week will improve sleep. but we know that any amount of exercise is beneficial for health. This study provides an additional incentive to get more active. Next, I'm going to turn to the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. This is for the May 2024 issue. And the first article is entitled Bloating. There is discomfort in your belly. It's more than just feeling full. You belch enough to annoy your friends and you also pass gas, but neither brings significant relief. In truth, you feel like you're pregnant, but you're well past that stage of life. Bloating isn't a condition, but more a symptom of one. Although feeling full is a common description of bloating, people experience bloating in various ways. It generally refers to a sensation of pressure that sometimes is accompanied by measurable swelling of the abdomen, as if someone attached a bicycle pump and filled your belly with air. 14% of American adults report having felt bloated in the past week. Bloating was more common in women and those with digestive conditions like irritable bowel syndrome, chronic constipation, or lactose malabsorption. More than half of the people who felt bloated did not seek out medical advice. Don't feel bashful about seeking medical care for bloating. It can be as treatable as it is common, and it often can be significantly helped by making small changes to your diet and lifestyle, or addressing the underlying condition that's causing the bloating. Managing it requires you to take an active role in your care. Before you seek medical care for bloating, spend a few days or weeks jotting down notes about associated symptoms and factors, like food or beverages you've consumed, the form and frequency of your stool, and your physical activity. Details kept in a symptom journal can be a big help. Bring the symptom journal to your healthcare visit to review with your care team. Your care team may go through a detailed history to determine what's causing the bloating and offer possible treatments. First, it's important to rule out other factors sometimes mistaken for bloating. One pseudo-bloat factor is abdominal obesity. A key difference is that most bloating will change over time, while carrying extra fat around the middle generally remains the same day after day. Several medical conditions can cause fluid to collect in the abdomen. This can be a feature of ovarian cancer, so don't overlook this if it's persistent. Your care team can check for these issues with a physical exam or imaging. A review of medications is often part of the exam. Many medications and supplements can cause bloating, but common culprits include supplements containing fiber, iron, or magnesium. Diabetes drugs like metformin, constipation drugs like lactulose, elixirs used with tube feeding, and opioid pain medications. Doctors at the Mayo Clinic in Florida offer an approach for diagnosing the cause of bloating that rules out certain common causes in the following order. First is dietary factors. Dietary factors are a common cause of bloating and can be treated successfully with small changes to what you eat and when. 35% of adults are lactose intolerant, a common cause of bloating. Also, certain habits can contribute: gum chewing, drinking from a straw, drinking carbonated beverages, eating too quickly, and other things that lead to excess air swallowing, like using CPAP devices for sleep apnea. Then there is constipation. Constipation is commonly associated with bloating and abdominal distension. If it's difficult to pass stool, it may be difficult to pass gas as well. In addition, it's important to note if you frequently have feelings of incomplete passing of stool, or if you sometimes have to manually assist the passing of stool. If constipation seems like it may be a factor, taking medications to reduce constipation or performing exercises to strengthen the pelvic floor muscles may help to ease bloating. Another is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. This condition occurs when there is an abnormal increase in the overall bacterial population of the small intestine, particularly types of bacteria not commonly found in that part of the digestive tract. Overgrowth commonly results when a health situation, like having a bowel anatomy that's altered by surgery, or a dysfunction of the nerves or muscles that leads to intestinal muscles contracting or relaxing properly, affects the passage of food and waste products to the digestive tract. This situation creates a breeding ground for bacteria. Healthcare professionals test for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO, by obtaining a sample of fluid from the small intestine and analyzing the fluid for bacterial growth. Or a breath test may be used to measure the amount of hydrogen or methane that you breathe out after drinking a mixture of glucose and water. Specific antibiotics are the first-line treatment for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Antibiotics reduce the overall small bowel bacterial load. Also, there is impaired viscerosomatic reflex, viscerosomatic. This reflex controls gas clearance and involves the contraction and relaxation of muscles in the diaphragm and abdominal wall. The diaphragm descends inappropriately, and the abdominal wall muscles relax, allowing the abdomen to protrude. People with this condition tend to be less bloated in the morning before they've eaten, but symptoms worsen shortly after meals. Passing stool can help ease symptoms, but things get worse again after the next snack or meal. Stress can also make bloating worse. Practicing deep belly breathing can sometimes help ease bloating if you have this condition. With proper diagnosis and treatment, you may be able to return to living your usual life with manageable bloating. But due to potentially serious implications, be sure not to take problematic and persistent bloating as a fact of life. A visit to your healthcare team can help identify the cause and get it treated. Now, once again, from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, here is News and Our Views. And the first article is entitled, Breast Cancer Overdiagnosis is an Issue for Older Women. Diagnosing breast cancer accurately and early is very important, but equally important is to avoid overdiagnosis, in which a diagnosis leads to treatments that can sometimes negatively affect the quality of life without actually extending life. A recent study found that overdiagnosis may be more common than previously thought. The study in the Annals of Internal Medicine looked at the health records of 55,000 women. It found that one-third to one-half of older women diagnosed with breast cancer may have been overdiagnosed. One measurement the study used, women who weren't screened for breast cancer in their later years were no more likely to die of the disease than were those who were screened. Those most prone to being overdiagnosed were 85 and older. Of course, it's tricky to understand who is overdiagnosed. Overdiagnosis means the cancer will grow slowly enough that it won't have a negative effect on the person during their lifetime. In that case, diagnosing and treating the cancer, which comes with significant disruption to life and health and tends to be expensive, may not be advised. Mayo Clinic experts say that while the study offers important insights about overdiagnosis, patients would benefit from a more holistic consideration of the topic. It's important to make informed choices about your particular screening situation. Talk with your healthcare team about your risk factors for breast cancer and other serious conditions, your overall health, your family health history, and other factors. The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force now recommends that all women get screened for breast cancer every other year starting at age 40 through age 74. Although some other organizations, including the Mayo Clinic, still recommend annual screening for most women in this age range. Women 75 and older are encouraged to discuss the benefits and risks of screening with their care team. No standard recommendations are given for this group. Now, once again in news of our views, here's a brief article about olive oil for dementia. Researchers have found another reason to dip your bread in olive oil instead of spreading on margarine or mayonnaise. Olive oil has long been touted as being heart healthy. Now, research suggests that it also may support brain health. In a study reported at the 2023 annual meeting of the American Society for Nutrition, researchers looked at food frequency questionnaires from more than 90,000 Americans. The researchers found that people who reported consuming half a tablespoon of olive oil per day or more lowered their odds of developing dementia by 28% when compared with people who rarely had olive oil. The researchers also found that swapping even a teaspoon of margarine or mayonnaise for olive oil every day reduced the risk of dying of dementia. Mayo Clinic experts say that healthy fats are linked to reduction in the rates of cognitive decline and dementia. Healthy monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats are found in olive oil, fish, nuts, and avocado. Meanwhile, spreads like butter and mayonnaise are made up of saturated fats. Several past studies have found that consuming monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats can help protect the blood-brain barrier. The blood-brain barrier is a layer of cells that regulates what can get into the brain. Leaks in the blood-brain barrier may be an early mechanism of memory impairment. The current study expands upon previous research that indicated that following a Mediterranean diet could improve cognitive function and slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. Olive oil is a key ingredient in the Mediterranean diet, along with fish, fruits, vegetables, and nuts. It appears that either extra virgin olive oil or refined olive oil might help improve memory and slow the breakdown of the blood-brain barrier, even without other dietary components. Now I'm going to very briefly go over an article called Lyme Disease, Put the Ick in Tick. Ticks carry a bad reputation. To eat, these parasites need blood from another living thing. Some ticks are fairly harmless, but others transmit infections that can range from relatively mild to life-changing. Lyme disease is a common condition caused by ticks. It's transmitted by a small black-legged tick, also called the deer tick. You should always be tick smart. A bullseye rash at the bite site is the classic characteristic sign of early Lyme disease, but it's not always present. The infection can also cause headache, fever, joint pain, and flu-like symptoms. If you have any combination of those symptoms that linger and you've been in an area prone to ticks, with wood or tall grass or brush, check in with your healthcare team. This is also true if you see a tick attached to your skin. Deer ticks are tiny, but they can expand dramatically in size once they have latched on. If you live in an area where Lyme disease is common, the distinctive rash might be enough for diagnosis. Blood tests may be used to identify antibodies to the Lyme-causing bacteria. Lyme disease can also be treated successfully with oral antibiotics. The illness can cause lingering pain and inflammation in the joints, heart palpitations, and irregular heart rhythms, various neurologic problems, and rarely brain and nervous system infection. If not caught early, it's possible for some of these symptoms to linger. If you're in a tick habitat, prevent ticks from latching onto your skin by wearing long sleeves and pants, shoes, and long socks. Apply tick repellent and remember to check yourself, your loved ones, and your pets after being in areas where ticks thrive. If you find a tick attached to your skin, remove it quickly. Grasp the tick close to the skin surface using tweezers if available. Pull the tick upward with a steady, continuous motion. Try not to twist. If a small part of the tick remains in the skin, leave it alone and let the skin heal. Clean the bite with an antiseptic, such as rubbing alcohol or soap and water. Be sure to call your healthcare team. Preserve the tick in a container if possible, in case your care team recommends bringing it in to an appointment. It's important to keep in mind that ticks transmit a variety of pathogens, including the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. It's also important to perform tick checks frequently so that ticks can be removed quickly from the body. A tick must be attached for at least 36 hours to transmit Lyme disease, so removal before this time will prevent that particular infection. Other tick-borne pathogens can be transmitted in less time, though, possibly within a few minutes to hours. There are Lyme vaccines for humans in clinical trials, and hopefully these will be available soon. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.